Welcome to Naturally Nourished, a food is medicine podcast that delivers cutting-edge information and solutions for optimal health. Allie Miller is a nutrition expert sought out by the media and America's top medical institutes for her revolutionary functional medicine interventions. From disease treatment to prevention, every episode will empower you with ways to put yourself back in control of your health. Please note, the topics discussed are for educational purposes only and should not be used in place of any medical advice, diagnosis, or treatment from a licensed health professional. Now welcome your host, Allie Miller, integrative dietitian and owner of Naturally Nourished, and her vice president, integrative dietitian Carly Vogler.
Hey everyone, thanks so much for tuning in. We just looked at our podcast downloads to give you all an update of our listener base, and we actually saw almost 10,000 of you are tuning in.
I feel like we came into this really mellow and professional. We should have been like, hey, 10,000!
That's true. I'm sorry. I'm just used to keeping it professional.
There were almost 10,000.
Okay, 10,000.
Woo!
So anyway, thank you so much for listening.
Yes.
And what we haven't got a ton of is your questions. We always just come up with questions based on what we know in a clinic people are asking. So keep those coming on the Allie Miller RD podcast page and let us know what you want to hear.
Absolutely. And remember, we have launched to iTunes. So you can download us direct through there if you have found us on the website. And you can share us on Facebook as well and all of your social media stuff. So thanks for chiming in and being a part of the conversation.
Woohoo! Today we are talking about attention deficit.
Yes. So this is a huge topic. I think that we tend to work with our pediatric population upon early diagnosis, but also we see in our adult population. A lot of us are dealing with this high influx of information and short timelines and trying to process it all and be as efficient as possible. And we have to perform on superhuman level. So that can create reliance on medications and stimulants. And that's what I really want to focus on today. A lot of the medications that are prescribed are in the methamphetamine category for attention deficit disorder. And it's interesting, especially when we talk about ADHD, which has the hyperactivity element. And I've never really understood how a legal form of speed helps to mellow out and relax. But really that overexcitatory process creates this superhuman-like concentration. The concern is that a lot of the ADHD symptoms and ADD in general, where we're talking brain fog, difficulty concentrating, difficulty with processing of information, or sitting still to focus on the information that's being brought to your brain, all can be addressed and correct with micronutrient deficiencies and functional medicine elements. There's always a root cause. And as we say with any disease condition, it's kind of like that gopher mole hole game where if you block one hole, the gopher is going to pop up somewhere else. So if we're talking about a micronutrient deficiency and ADHD is the primary symptom, by just treating with methamphetamine or an addictive substance, we can silence that symptom and then see that come about in another way, shape, or form. So we're going to talk about food as medicine today and how we can treat with functional approaches.
I love that metaphor. I've never heard you say that one before. That the mole or the
right.
The gopher pops
I was using
up.
That today with clients. I felt like it worked. I don't know.
It makes so much sense. And that's in so many different cases.
Yeah, absolutely.
So what we want to do today is identify a couple root causes of ADHD so you can really see how this may have proliferated in you or someone you know. And then also, of course, always how we follow root causes is with solutions. So we want to go through at least six that people might not be aware of.
And I would say, you know, this information today is important to consider even if you haven't been diagnosed with ADHD, but you're just looking to improve your brain function, because the solutions are going to be things that can help you with mental acuity and cognitive performance in general.
Absolutely. So the first one we're going to start off talking about is food allergies.
Yes. So we know already, and you may have listened to our other episodes on food allergies versus sensitivities or what have you, but we know that food allergies and food sensitivities are significantly on the rise. And there's a couple different hypotheses of why this is. A lot of it ties back to gut sterility, so a long-term history of antibiotic use. This is seen in trends with a lot of my kiddos that had otitis media or ear infections and tubes in the ears, or had been on routine antibiotics a couple times during a given year. This is going to really have a sterilizing influence on the GI tract. We also see this with the antibiotics being used for acne treatment, and then that can drive down further gut dysfunction. And one of the elements of this is food allergies. When we have a sterile gut, we tend to have more damage to the GI villi or the gut lining, and this drives that concept of leaky gut. And within that type of a gut, there's a larger space between the gut junctions. So in an optimal functioning gut, the epithelial lining is intact. That's the fancy word for lining of the intestines. And the finger-like projections, those villi, are going to be nice, tightly gathered. In leaky gut, there is an irritant, so it can also come from a food inflammatory compound. Another hypothesis is the high amount of GMOs coming into our processed foods, especially corn. Corn holds a lot of pesticide residue, and the glycophosphate pesticide residue on corn can be a huge gut irritant. So whether it's a food irritant or whether it's a lack of good bacteria from antibiotics, the villi get damaged and there's larger space between them, and then food passes into the blood-gut barrier on higher amounts. It's like a high pollen day for people that have seasonal allergies. And so when those food particles pass into the bloodstream, the blood processes it. It has an inflammatory response, and it can also lead to cognitive dysfunction or over hyperactivity.
Yes, and I know we've talked about this in some past episodes, and eventually is going to have to be its own episode, because one of the tests that we run to help identify what food antigens are causing issues in your body is called the MRT test.
Yes.
So that is one helpful solution. The other thing is the gold standard elimination diet. It's great. It just requires so much patience and journaling and keeping track in such a restrictive diet because of the 3-day delay that you can feel with food reactivities. So this test has just been a really great tool to help people get results faster.
Absolutely. It's like Carly said, it's called the MRT test, and you can read more about it on AllieMillerRD.com if you go to treatments and labs. And it is a way to identify 150 foods and chemicals, which ones cause inflammation in your body specifically.
Yes, the first one, possible cause of attention deficit, is food allergies, what we just talked about. The second one is heavy metal toxicity.
Absolutely. So we see that actually 1 out of 7 new diagnoses, and this is tied to pediatric cases, different, I would say, in adults, but 1 out of 7 pediatric cases of ADHD is tied to some form of metal toxicity. So, you know, if we're looking at a house, we want to screen for lead paint, knowing that after 2004, we don't have to be as concerned because lead paint had been eradicated at that point. But many people are living in houses older than built in 2004. And then the other concern is other toxic chemicals. When we look at metal toxicity, we like to run a blood panel and also a metabolite panel. You can test hair and you can test urine as a metabolite, but whole blood bound is typically a great way to assess for heavy metal. And we consider not only doing a detox to support these children, we see a huge trend of a need for glutathione. And glutathione is a nutrient that helps the liver in processing toxic metals, reduces free radical exposure, and also reduces things like calcification and improves functionality. A lot of times you'll see with children that have a glutathione deficiency, dark circles under their eyes, and that's a really big turnkey piece of glutathione deficiency or liver issues. And that would tie back to that metal toxicity.
I was going to jump in and ask, this is something I get a lot in clinic. How else can people be exposed to toxins? I think lead paint we've all heard of, but what else should people be looking out for in their environment and their diet to avoid toxicity?
Well, water is a huge one as well. You know, we just heard about, I don't know what timestamp you guys are listening, but Flint, Michigan with their lead in their water was pretty concerning. And a lot of large cities use a lot of chlorine to purify their water from pathogens or bad bacteria, but they don't purify and filter out toxic metals. So water is a huge source. Foods are a huge source. We may have heard of things like arsenic and rice and things like that. And then also looking at environmental influence. So it can even be airborne, not heavy metals, but toxins can be airborne for sure. But I would say water and food are your primary sources, actually, even above paints and other commercial.
And I know a lot of people have heard of the mercury in fish. That's probably one of the most common as well.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. And one good way that a cheaper way to look for metal toxicity, you know, you can look at a toxic metal panel, as I mentioned, and that's something that's also available on our website. But you can also, if you're looking at a iron count, you can look at your total iron binding capacity. You can ask your physician to draw that. And it's beyond a complete blood count, which looks at your hemoglobin and hematocrit and your types of white blood cells, a total iron binding capacity, and then looking at your percent iron saturation. So these are cheaper labs that can be covered by like LabCorp or Quest or any of your standard labs. And total iron binding capacity tells us how many receptors on your blood cells are available for iron to bind. And then your percent iron saturation is showing how bound or saturated it is. So if your total iron binding capacity is low, you have a low capacity for binding, but yet your saturation is low, then that's going to show that you have binding of other divalent compounds or other potential minerals that could be toxic metals. And then that could be driving your anemia. So anemia is one sign in the blood that you're not absorbing iron because there's another toxic metal that's binding to your iron receptors. So that's some way to look at it in a cheaper way.
That makes a lot of sense. So food allergies and heavy metal toxicity, the next possible root cause of attention deficit is pH levels. And
yes,
this is, I can't wait to hear what you have to say about this, because this is something, again, people ask so much about in clinic. There's books out there about alkaline water. And,
yeah.
And I know the basics, but I just am curious how you explain it, because I think this is, it's very common to hear.
Yes. So I don't subscribe to the concept of like an alkalizing diet. The pH is regulated by the kidneys and the respiratory tract. And so it is looking at an imbalance, and also in the GI tract by bile and hydrochloric acid. But primarily in the blood, the regulators are your kidneys and your respiratory tract. And those are your filters of the blood, okay? And filters of environmental toxins as well, both from what you're breathing in or from what you're processing in your blood. So when our pH levels shift lower than 7.4, meaning that the blood is slightly acidic, that can drive calcium deficiency. And calcium deficiency is really important because it plays a huge role with anxiety and relaxation and calming in the nerves. It's interesting because when we run our micronutrient panel, often my patients that will have severe cramps, they think it's a potassium magnesium thing, but it's calcium deficiency that can cause those huge Charlie horses. Also, anxiety, as I mentioned, and insomnia. That nerve calming effect can come in calcium. And so it's a really also simple solution to help children. We can tie in the sleep and things like that that come from breastfeeding and the association of giving warm milk. There is an association that potentially calcium is the reason of why they're calming down in that evening time.
And I just had a client actually who was driven, had by accident had her parathyroid removed.
Yes.
And so calcium was driven super low and it threw her into seizures.
Yeah. The parathyroid regulates your calcium as an electrolyte and in the bloodstream. Absolutely. Interesting.
Okay. So allergies, heavy metal toxicity, pH, the next possible root cause we want to talk about, which there's a lot of blogs on this. There's another podcast, but bacteria, yeast, and candida overgrowth.
Yes. And we have an ebook coming out in like a week on this. It's very exciting. So this is a big one. So we have episodes on yeast overgrowth or candidiasis or dysbiosis. And this is where we can often see GI issues like bloating or distension or changes in bowels. But brain fog can be a huge element of candidiasis. And we do see this as a strong correlation clinically with our children. And the candida overgrowth also ties back to our first reason, which is the food sensitivities. Because if you have yeast lining the GI tract, you're not going to have those nice tight junctions. You're going to have the yeast creating space between the villi. And then that's where those food particles can get into the bloodstream and cause inflammatory processes. So candida of itself, the yeast can actually travel to the brain, and that can have an influence interfering with brain function. It can have an influence with low serotonin output, which can drive neurotransmitter imbalance because 90% of our serotonin is made along the gut by probiotics. So if we have yeast overgrowth, we're not having an optimal symbiosis or happy gut balance, then we're not going to have the production of the serotonin. So the yeast does a couple of things. Again, it creates more of a propensity towards inflammatory food particles leaking into the bloodstream, and that creates issues in the brain. And then the yeast itself can create brain fog, and then the yeast's influence on low serotonin can create issues with cognitive function. So it's a big, big one. And doing a yeast approach with your children, what's one thing that you can test, or with yourself? Test your tolerance to taking a probiotic supplement first and foremost. So start with like our Naturally Nourished Baseline probiotic and take that every night for 3 nights and then go up to 2 every night for 3 nights and see if you notice an influence of distension or bloating or if you notice a change in your bowels or discomfort. If there's no noticeable change, then taking the probiotic means that there was not too significant of an overgrowth of bad bacteria creating that battle in the body. Another thing you can play with that I've seen with patients is intolerance of coconut oil, leading to like redness in the ears or a buildup in the body in general of like athlete's feet, fungus in the nail beds, thrush or yeast in the oral cavity, as well as having earwax. Those can all be symptoms of yeast overgrowth.
I think there's one more component with the yeast overgrowth. It typically drives a lot of sugar cravings.
Yes.
So that
yes.
can make you very, you know, hard to concentrate, a little jittery as well.
Absolutely. And I think that goes to the next one, which is sugar perfect. Spikes. Yeah. So sugar spikes and crashes can lead to energy fluctuations and irritability. Brain fog can happen when we have hyperglycemic influence. And then we can also have difficulty concentrating during that postprandial slump, we call it. That's the fancy medical jargon for right after lunch. You know, I know that when I'm lecturing at a medical conference, we always joke about, oh, who got the postpartum time frame to lecture? Because everyone's kind of just buzzed out, especially if they eat too many refined carbohydrates over their lunch. So keeping blood sugars regulated is a huge piece of cognitive grounding, and that's going to be definitely a piece of a solution we'll speak to in a moment.
And so we've talked about in a couple other episodes about optimal eating, frequency of eating, always pairing a carbohydrate with a protein or a fat can really prevent these blood sugar spikes.
Absolutely, absolutely. So if they're having fruit, having those nut butters and things like that to keep that lid on the jar per se.
Okay, and then the final possible root cause that we're going to discuss today is micronutrient deficiencies.
Yes. So when we're looking to micronutrient deficiencies, this is where we really treat what we call upstream medicine. So again, we're looking at these trends of what nutrients influence on the body. And that's that great scenario of like the mole hole, where if we're looking at something like zinc, a zinc deficiency can drive ADHD. And, you know, the primary mechanism is that it helps with dopamine, which helps with mood and concentration. And then it also helps with melatonin and serotonin, which can play a big role with information processing. So if zinc is deficient and it's going to be blocked with ADHD with a methamphetamine drug, then we can see other symptoms like hair loss or hair thinning. We can see, you know, so there's the body is trying to tell us that it's deficient in something. And if we treat with a Band-Aid, it's going to show up another place in the body. It could be showing up in insomnia. And so this is something that we like to address. Zinc deficiency. Another one that we look at is magnesium. Magnesium can also help with sleep and concentration. It plays a role with muscle relaxation in general. I have seen in the pediatric population, children that pull their hair out and children that eat hair. It's actually, I can't think of the medical term, but there is a diagnosis of children that eat their own hair. And it's a symptom of anxiety that they're pulling their hair out and doing that. And that behavior can be corrected with magnesium glycinate. And so magnesium plays a huge role as well with muscle relaxation and regulation of emotion. And then B6 is the one that we always speak to with neurotransmitters. B6 helps as a cofactor in the production of serotonin and other neurotransmitters that regulate mood and concentration. B6 in high dose can be just as effective. It's actually been shown in research studies comparing it to Ritalin. So pretty awesome, remarkable outcomes with something that has a very low toxicity. And then another one that I would look into is folate. And that may tie back into if the patient has a history of genetic dysfunction with MTHFR, that folate conversion in the body, because MTHFR genetic defects, that stands for methylene tetrahydrofolate reductase, right? So that MTHFR influence creates an issue of absorbing and using folate, as well as driving excess toxic buildup, because methylation is a process of building and excreting. So it can be kind of a double-edged sword if we have deficiency in the folic acid. And we always like to supplement the form of 5-methyl tetrahydrofolate versus folic acid, which is going to be synthetic.
Yeah, so if you're curious about any of these deficiencies, you can eat a well-rounded diet. You could take a multivitamin with B vitamins in their methyl form and the folate in their methyl form. But if you're looking to see specifically what you're deficient in, we do run a micronutrient test. It's a blood test by SpectraCell. I call this the bread and butter of functional medicine because it truly is the root cause of so many different imbalances. Mm-hmm. They have amazing correlation wheels online. If you look up SpectraCell website, it's full of information. But that's a really good place to start for preventative medicine as well. Because when you replete your nutrients, you're not only dealing with things that you're currently experiencing, but what can develop down the line.
Right. And that's that exact example of if you treat that symptom, then that micronutrient deficiency is going to show its head in another way, shape, or form. And I think that's often seen with these micronutrient deficiencies. So yeah, B6, magnesium, folate, and then the minerals I've already discussed. So zinc and calcium are huge elements to this symptom. And then we can't forget about our friend omega-3 fatty acids and the DHA components. So EPA and DHA are the two primary therapeutic compounds of omega-3 fatty acids, and DHA is the one that we think of with cognitive function. So both prevention of Alzheimer's disease as well as brain development that's being added to a lot of pediatric formulas, and DHA should definitely be included with a prenatal pack. So this is really important with brain function, absolutely.
For sure. Okay, so we highlighted a bunch that hopefully some of these resonated and start to make sense how something like attention deficit can happen. But let's talk about the more fun part, what foods you can eat to help address ADHD.
Yes.
So let's talk about fat first.
So fat is huge. As I was just mentioning, beyond the omega-3s, which play a role directly with brain function, the brain is primarily built of fat. And so we need fat to help with cognitive function. Fat is very grounding as well and tonifying. So it helps to balance out those spikes of blood sugar, which can cause anxiety and or fatigue. The fat also helps to coat all of our nerve lining, our myelin sheath. So a high fat diet helps to create less spasticity or less hyperactivity in the body, which also helps with that cognitive function.
Okay. So some fat rich foods that I know we're a big fan of is nut butters and nuts, walnuts. I always love, I forget the term, I'm sure you know it, but when a food looks like the organ that it most supports.
Nature's doctrine of signatures.
Yes, that. Nature's doctrine of signatures. A walnut looks like a brain. Yes. So I just
right
love
and left
that.
Hemisphere, yeah.
Yep.
And so, yeah, that has a high amount of ALA, omega-3 fatty acid precursor for the EPA, DHA, and very anti-inflammatory, yes. Also good fat forms, especially if your child is in a nut-free school zone. And, you know, again, you could use this information for both children and adults. But if we're thinking of throwing things into a lunch, coconut shreds and coconut butter packs. I love that Artisana came out with a coconut butter pack. Avocado is fantastic, grass-fed butter. So this goes back to our concepts of doing like our ginger zinger matcha tea, which is in our cookbook, or the bulletproof like type keto coffees and things like that. When we add these fats to something that has caffeine, you're playing with a lot of the similar mechanisms of these stimulant drugs. So you're getting something that's a cognitive stimulant, the caffeine, and then you're influencing it by adding fat. Which helps to carry that caffeine to be a little bit less agitating and also delivers the antioxidants, which are both water and fat soluble, to the bloodstream. So we're actually able to use all of the antioxidants that are in the coffee bean, which it is pretty high rich antioxidant. You get the stimulation of the caffeine and then you get the grounding fats. So doing the coconut oil and grass-fed butter in a caffeinated tea or coffee could be a great food as medicine therapeutic for treatment of ADHD.
Yes, we love that in the morning. It's such a good way for almost anyone to get started. And kind of piggybacking on the fat, we always want to pair your carbohydrates with fat or protein. And you can always eat protein foods by themselves. You can eat fat by itself, just like in the keto coffee Ali was just talking about. But it's the carbohydrates, starches, starchy vegetables, grains, fruits, beans. You want to have them with other things so to prevent a spiking of your blood sugar.
Yes. So in general, we want to keep both the total amount of carbohydrates within a moderate intake. And then when we consume them, like Carly said, keeping them balanced with a protein or a healthy fat. So as far as carbohydrates go, and one good episode to brush up on all of this, maybe you can look, Carly, as I'm continuing on, about the macronutrient balance episode that we did. I think it's Optimal Eating
It's Optimal Eating. It's one of the first ones. I'll take a look.
Okay. Well, anyway, when you're looking at your carbohydrates, we use 15 grams of carbs as an exchange. And so in one of the episodes, we talk through many different exchanges of what that means. But generally speaking, we're talking about like a half cup of a starchy vegetable or a half cup of like a legume or a bean. And then for many other foods, it might be a smaller amount. If you're looking at like a gluten-free pretzel, you would look at, you know, how many are in the 15 gram amount. But anyway, trying to keep it at 30 grams, likely for women, at a max for one meal, and then the other meal is closer to 15, would be appropriate. So basically I'm saying 1 to 2 at max carbohydrate choices or exchanges per meal. So that might be your cut up apple on top of your skipjack tuna with your avocado and your leafy greens. That would be, that apple would be that one carb choice. Or if you were doing a 2-carb meal, that means that you might do a kombucha on the side, which would have about 15 grams of carbs in an entire bottle because it is sweetened a little bit with that fermented cane juice. Another example of this would be if you were doing a cup of roasted curried sweet potato with your pork chop and your green beans, right? That cup would be double or 2 half cups, and that would be your 30 gram amount.
The episode Ali was just referring to is episode number 2, which I can't believe we're almost at 30 episodes. And it's called What is Optimal Eating? So that'll go through your macronutrients and talk a lot more about serving sizes of carbohydrates, proteins, and fats.
And this is always the place to start, honestly, in adults and children. If we're thinking that we're dealing with brain fog, make sure that your macronutrients are on track. Make sure that you are low glycemic, meaning keeping your carbs in control and pairing them. And if you are an adult or a child that fits a safe approach to do a ketogenic diet, then that may be another thing to try before medications, because that can really influence greatly cognitive and brain function. And that would be a high fat, very, very low carbohydrate diet.
Absolutely. So beyond balancing our macronutrients, we also want to take kind of a more macroscopic approach and just talk about cleaner eating and avoiding processed foods.
Yep. I mean, I can't tell you, I had a client a couple weeks ago that came to me and wanted to do the MRT test and then wanted to do a toxic metal test. And when I looked at their intake, they were eating high fructose corn syrup 4 times a day. You know, they were eating gluten at every meal. And it was like, well, let's just start with some of these pillars of optimal eating and see how you feel first versus going into a very expensive and potentially restrictive plan.
Oh, totally. So it's you can make so many leaps and bounds by cutting out some of these obvious things.
Yep. Starting with food is medicine first is typically a turnkey push in the right direction. So yes, we want to eliminate high fructose corn syrup is a big one that we see, both because it's tied to mercury contamination and also it's so high glycemic index that it creates those blood sugar spikes, following by hyperinsulinemia. And so the insulin tends to rebound, and that hyperinsulinemia means too much insulin is fired. So a high blood sugar spike is often followed by excessive insulin, and that tells the body to store fat, which is not ideal, but also drops the blood sugar. So it's this kind of mountain and valley approach to blood sugars that's very concerning. Also, with high fructose corn syrup tends to come artificial food colorants and dyes. And so we see this in a lot of foods that are targeted and marketed towards children. There has been a decent amount of research that does show correlation and trend to hyperactivity and issues with cognitive functioning. And the concept is that these compounds pass into the bloodstream and create, again, that kind of high pollen-like day scramble on the brain. And the neurons have a difficult time firing information for cognition. And then one other one that I would highlight is MSG and excessive glutamate in general. Glutamic acid or glutamate can be an excitatory neurotransmitter. And so too much of that can cause hyperactivity and difficulty concentrating. And this is also tied to like that MSG or Chinese food diet syndrome, where some individuals get migraines or can get severe anxiety following intake of glutamate in processed foods or in that MSG additive.
And if anyone is new to this world, this might sound overwhelming, eliminating all these foods that are so common, but it actually can be pretty simple. You know, there's the bright colored fruit gummies, if that's something that's in your kiddo's lunch all the time, you know, you can replace it with a cleaner fruit leather.
Absolutely.
You know, dried fruit. Think single ingredient. Just this can be complicated, but it also can be really simple.
Yes. And I think like Carly said, so, you know, identify where are the common irritants or the ones that are the typical issues for us, and then work to come up with simple strategic solutions. And that's a great way that you can work with one of our practitioners or just create goals that you do one at a time and until step by step your approach with food has totally been redefined.
Yep. Okay, and the next one would be to concentrate on increasing protein in the diet.
Yes, so there has been really interesting findings, especially with testing scores, looking at when, for a child, 15 grams of protein is consumed at breakfast. And so as an example, an ounce of biological protein is 7 grams. So biological protein is coming from an animal product. So this is like a hard-boiled egg, or if we're looking at like a pork sausage patty, doing for breakfast, maybe it's pork sausage with cooked down apples and cinnamon. That's a great cooked in coconut oil. That'd be a really great grounding breakfast. And then based on the ounces of the patty, it would be how many grams you're getting. So if it's a 3 ounce pork patty, 7 times 3, you'd be getting 21 grams of protein at that meal. For adults, we like to look for at least 21 grams of protein. And that often can also lead to satiety or holding over your appetite, which can be great for your body composition goals. But protein beyond helping with concentration also provides amino acids. And so the connection of amino acids on the brain is that amino acids typically help to build neurotransmitters, right? So we're looking at like tryptophan helps with serotonin production, which can help to reduce anxiety and aid with concentration. Also, tyrosine helps to build dopamine. And then we see another friendly amino acid, L-theanine. And L-theanine is the one that I would definitely say is one of my kind of special toolkit solutions for cognitive function for adults and children. L-theanine is typically the highest food source is found in matcha, which is the powdered form of green tea. So definitely checking out that matcha ginger zinger where we put that coconut oil and that grass-fed butter or ghee in matcha with a little bit of ginger is a great way to deliver that L-theanine to the brain. L-theanine helps with the beta waves in the brain, and it helps with increasing our REM cycle, which is our circadian sleep rhythm, which is our more creative and dreamlike state or deeper relaxation mode. Also, it helps with our meditative state. We see those spikes in the brain during significant meditation and concentration and focus. So L-theanine helping with that influence in the blood can be one of the best influencers. And I recommend starting with 200 up to 500 milligrams of L-theanine. And you can start by taking it at rise and midday if you don't have any sleep issues. But if you have some sleep issues, you might try it rise and rest. But it's one that has an onset of about 6 to 8 hours of influence.
What's great about L-theanine too, as well, when we run neurotransmitter panels, if you're high in neurotransmitters or low in neurotransmitters, the L-theanine works for both.
Yes.
So that's probably the one that's you can play with.
Safest, yeah. And that's why I don't recommend often giving 5-HTP or the serotonin tryptophan precursor for a child because that can drive them to have excessive serotonin production. Or, you know, they may not then make as much serotonin in the brain influentially. So L-theanine is a great way where you don't have to test additionally on a neurotransmitter, and it helps to modulate versus drive one pathway. So like Carly said, it can help with excess or deficiency and then absolutely plays a role with those brain waves.
And while we're on the subject, are there any other supplements you want to just speak to support, you know, a synergistic approach with food as medicine?
So absolutely an omega-3 fatty acid supplement, one that has at least a gram of DHA would be important. So it could have a balance of EPA DHA, or it could be higher in DHA, but about a gram a day of DHA would be really important. And just to distinguish, I'm not talking DHEA, which is a supplement sold on its own. DHA is a compound found in omega-3 fatty acids. So about a gram a day of DHA. And then another one to consider is a probiotic supplement. Beyond helping with immune health and digestive health, that probiotic can help to prevent the candida overgrowth. It can also help to build healthy neurotransmitters. Like I said, that serotonin is made in the gut. So a probiotic, DHA, and then the L-theanine that I mentioned. And the final one I'd mention, if the individual is also high anxiety, so maybe they're getting a little tightness in the chest or more difficulty concentrating during a presentation or during flying or any sort of anxiety-driving situations, GABA is a really fantastic compound. This is a neuroinhibitory compound, so it helps to mellow out. For some people, GABA can be too mellowing out, and then they have brain fog. So it's important. This would be really only for the anxiety-driven ADHD individual.
Yeah, I think all of these can be really helpful, and it's always good to drive with information if you have the opportunity first. Run some tests so we don't have to, like Ali said, mess with neurotransmitters or brain chemicals when we don't have to.
Yeah, and you know, again, so kind of when we're looking at the big picture, start with your diet, balance out your carbohydrates with protein and fat, eliminate the gunk, right? And then start to look at, am I getting probiotic-rich foods? Am I getting good sources of these minerals? And if you've gone through those steps, then you might want to start to think, do I need to do any of these additional functional tests to look at the food sensitivity elements? And then we like to, as practitioners, see other trends. So does that individual also have eczema, or do they have an autoimmune disease? Well, then that's a MRT, inflammatory food panel person. Or do they have, like I mentioned, hair thinning or other micronutrient deficiencies? Then we want to run that SpectraCell panel on them. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, if you've hit the foundational elements of the diet and you feel that you eat pretty healthy, then I definitely would recommend looking a little further down the rabbit hole on a functional approach.
Yep. So talking about food first, let's talk about the recipe that you came up with, Allie, that is actually one of the most popular for us on Pinterest and on the blog.
Yes.
To help with concentration.
Yeah, so I used to call it the Funky Focus smoothie, and then the other name that we've called
I didn't know that.
The Choco Nana Shake. So whatever fun name you want to come up with. It has a copious amount of almond butter in it, actually. So be mindful of that if you are watching for weight gain, but it has a third cup of almond butter in it. You could do a quarter cup. You could do 2 tablespoons because about 2 tablespoons is going to give you roughly 150 to 180 calories. So it could be up there. But if you're looking for weight gain, a third cup of almond butter would be definitely appropriate. This is going to be your whole fats. We want to find an almond butter that does not have additives and is really only ingredient of almonds, especially one that doesn't have added oils like a palm oil or something like that. Putting in a frozen banana or a half of a frozen banana, depending on our carb tolerance, is going to be a little bit of carbohydrate to give us that immediate boost of energy, especially for post-workout. That can help to refuel the muscles. A quarter teaspoon of cinnamon. Cinnamon is going to help to blunt that glycemic influence of the banana by balancing out our insulin resistance and helping that insulin response to work and function appropriately. Then we add in a couple tablespoons of raw cacao powder. This is going to add, of course, a nice chocolate flavor. And it's going to also provide some of that caffeine and some L-theanine, both which are therapeutic compounds for concentration and focus. And the cacao also has a rich amount of magnesium, which helps with that muscle relaxation and concentration. Then we would add in a milk of choice. So almond milk could be a great option here, about 6 to 8 ounces. And then we want to add in protein, as we mentioned, at least 15 grams if this is going to be a breakfast. So I would recommend using the grass-fed whey or a grass-fed collagen of sorts. Both of these would be great options for helping with the concentration and focus. So we have our fats, we have our protein, we have a moderate amount of carbohydrate, and then therapeutics from the cinnamon and the cacao. And this could also be like, they call it, I think, Elvis thing, you know, like the Elvis, whatever, when it's like a peanut butter chocolate thing, I think. So yeah, this would be a great way to get that flavor profile and satisfy your cravings while keeping your head from the clouds.
It tastes like a healthy milkshake, I think. Yep. It really does.
And I've also done this exact recipe by adding in a couple handfuls of spinach. Mm-hmm. And it's a great way to get greens in. It stays chocolate colored, so it's still deep brown. And so your partner won't know that you added spinach to it, or your children or whoever in the household. And it's a great way to get in more of that magnesium and that folate and antioxidants and fiber.
Yeah, spinach is probably the one leafy green that you really can't taste. Kale would be a little bit more dicey.
Yeah. Depends on your palate.
Yeah. Well, thanks everyone again for tuning in. We really appreciate the follower base that we've created. And please send us your comments, your questions. We'd love to get some things answered in our next Q&A session.
All right. Till next time.
Thank you for listening to the Naturally Nourished Podcast. Visit our blog at alliemillerrd.com for recipes, wellness tips, and food as medicine meal plans. Connect with Allie and Carly at alliemillerrd on Instagram, Twitter, and Facebook. Until next time, stay nourished and be well.